she had such a great spin on just her liveliness and just comfort in the kitchen.
And that makes people feel comfortable themselves, you know? It's okay, and get yourself organized. Organization is important.
I'm here.
Oh, you're still here.
Well, I'm glad we said some good things there. I want to thank you for speaking about Bard, because the next session we're having at 3 o'clock is about Bard and how to download books on Bard Mobile.
I love Bard. 10 smoothie cleanse challenge. And we got the book from Bard. I believe like in chapter 4, it makes the shopping list for you. And it's a really good book. And they have like a support group in Facebook and stuff like that. But Bard has amazing.
What's the name of that book?
10 Day Smoothie Cleanse. And it was a bestseller a couple of years ago.
Nancy Yeager, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you, Nancy.
About the kitchen scale and how they always break. I know that the Independence Market sells a kitchen scale.
This is Jean Park. And regarding that scale, one of the cautions that are given on all of those scales, and we don't have a talking one, but when I had vision, I used the visual one all the time. But the caution was, don't set anything over however many pounds or ounces on it, because that will ruin the scale. And so maybe dependent on how it's being stored or accidentally sent something heavier than the maximum on it, it may be wiping out that computer chip.
The heaviest thing I weigh is 8 ounces.
Some people don't realize there really is a maximum. So that, no, if you know that, then you're giving it a try.
I really like the idea of the portion control plates. I'm going to be checking that out on Amazon or wherever. I really like that idea.
They make them for kids. They make them for adults too.
This is Jean again, and I don't mean to dominate here, but first of all, I did teach home economics for 20 years teaching food labs, and so gave demonstrations all the time. And I would hire Irma immediately. Could somebody help or reteach me, because I've done it once, but I can't get it again, how to get my name to come up on my iPhone when I'm on Zoom.
So you can change it in multiple places. You can change it in Zoom, but I would suggest, this is Janie Degenshine, and I'm the technology person that's coming up at 3 o'clock. I'm just explaining that when we did our state convention,
okay,
this was one of the topics we did. So the best way to do it, in my opinion, is to go to settings and you'll change it globally. You'll name your phone. So anywhere you go, not just in Zoom, it'll be called you. The first thing you'll see is your name, iCloud, whatever.
Yeah.
And that's, open that up. And then there's spots where you can change your name. You can make your name whatever you want and change it there. And then your phone will be renamed, not just Zoom. The way I do it is I open up settings before you hear Wi-Fi and, you know, turn off airplane mode and all that right near the top and open that and swipe in there and make sure it has your name first and last name set correct.
Hi, this is Irma Paika. And I got the book number for the DB
Bernie,
number.
The DB
is,
number.
And it's 10-day green smoothie cleanse. And he's 79385.
79385. That's all you have to put in the search field.
There's also another one that I share in the chat, and it's the air fryer. 109512. I love to search by book number because that way it takes you directly to that one.
This is June Hunter. When you're using a straight cane and you're there with people, take for instance, like you're at the center and the table is round, how can you maneuver the cane so no one wouldn't trip over it?
This is Liz. I can help answer that.
Thank you, Liz.
With the circular tables, it might be a little bit smaller, which I think is why you're, you know, worried about it sticking out. So there's a couple of techniques. One really easy one, if you're like in maybe a coffee shop or a Starbucks and it's one of those really tall, itty bitty little barista tables, you can just kind of sit with your cane on your shoulder. So I do that quite often. I'll just leave it kind of resting on my shoulder with the tip down toward my feet. So that's one, you know, pretty simple, kind of keeps it close. It's not intrusive to you or other folks. If you have enough room, like let's say, for example, it's a round table and maybe there's someone sitting across from you, you can put the cane on the floor with a tip facing out the direction that you are facing and kind of arrange it so that it is going under the person's chair that is across from you. And then also then the handle will be going up under your chair. You know, the main thing you want to avoid is it just kind of sticking out in space without anything blocking it. But if you're kind of lining it up with someone else's chair that's already sticking out, then you know, it's keeping it from someone possibly tripping on it if they're walking down the aisle. And also another thing, if you're in an area where you have like a wall near you, you may be able to just prop it in a corner or to prop it like on the frame of the window. And I do that a lot if I'm in a restaurant where I am near a wall. So you have a few different options.
This is Shelley. Another idea is you could just lay it on the floor parallel with the wall. I've done that before. The other thing about putting it under your seat might be keep your toe on your cane so that you will notice if somebody's trying to move it or it's in somebody's way, you can be the one to negotiate it. But if you keep your foot on it, it doesn't roll away from you then.
The settings will have eight chairs around this table, 8 to 10 chairs. And they're not spaced out as wide as it should be. It is a circular table. And then now I am tall, so my cane is long. And so therefore, underneath the chair, it's not going to be that much space for the length of my cane.
You're putting it from an angle. You'd put the handle under your chair, angle it under the table, under chairs that would be across from you. The length of the table, it's what's going to be the most of the length of your cane. Some will be under your chair. The handle would be, say, in the middle underneath your chair. Mm-hmm. Then it's diagonal, and the tip is possibly like what Liz was saying, under the chair catty corner from you, but it's in the middle of the legs of the chair. It shouldn't really be that big of a problem. I know what you're referring to, and does that sound logical?
I'm going to try it. When I walk with my cane, mine is a foldable cane, but I do have a straight cane. And from the presentation today, that would be the better, you know, choice to use is a straight cane. Now, with my folding cane, it has the, you know, the rollerball tip. When I'm going left to right, right to left, and I'm walking, and then so when I fold my cane, I place it on the floor underneath my chair. That's fine. I don't want to fall, and I don't want anyone else to trip over it or the cane gets broken because everybody at this table either low vision or blind. And we sit like in the center. There is no wall toward, you know, near me. Young lady was saying, place it on your shoulder. That's not going to work. It's not going to work for me.
That's more if you're sitting at more of a high top kind of.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Okay.
I might just vocalize like whoever's at my table. I might just say like, hey, I'm going to put my cane down on the floor. I'm going to kind of angle it where it may be under your chair, you know, just letting you know what's up. So you could kind of make folks aware of it. If okay. You're worried about them, like, not seeing it, usually it's not, you know, it's not too big a deal. Like, I've seen some really tall dudes, 6'4" guys with 69-inch canes that they're maneuvering at tables and different
things.
So it definitely can be done. You just got to kind of find a technique that's comfortable for you and just let folks know what you're doing.
With the straight cane, when you're getting in the car, like in the front, either in the back, you have to put your seatbelt on. So how do you maneuver this cane and it's straight? Wilbur has said, put the cane to your right. Okay, that's if I'm in the front. So but yeah. I have to come across with the seatbelt. Where is this cane going to be at? Is
it going to be all over the place? Put, you know, sit into the car and have mm-hmm. the cane outside of the car. That can be if you're on the passenger side or the back driver's side. Put the cane in first before you do your seatbelt. You know, what I do is I just push it down to make sure that it is flush with the floor or as low as it can go. And then I'll go ahead and close the door and put my seatbelt on. You can do that first before the seatbelt because you're right. They can catch. So, yeah. So you do it after that.
Thank you.
Vincent had his hand raised.
I never sit down and keep my leg outside the open door. I've had a couple of experiences. One was in Chicago that is known for its winds. My ankle was almost broken. So I do not suggest that at all. I stand by the door, whether it's the front door or the back door. And I put, if I'm in the front, I put the back part of the cane towards the back of the car in between the seat and the door jamb and then lodge it under on the right side next to my feet. And then I get in and close the door and the same thing reverse front when I'm in the back seat. The other thing is that I use, if I know that I'm attending a meal function, if I am going to a meeting, a convention, if I am going to the theater, I always use the folding cane because I don't want it to be, you know, people to trip over it. I find it more convenient by folding it and put it under my legs. I always know where it is. Every single time people know that I'm blind, they still trip when we go to restaurants, and I use that one. So I use it for safety reasons. And I did have a collapsible cane, which quickly found its way to the garbage. The folding cane, I always carry with me when I travel as a spare one because it's easier to store. And so I always have a backup for the rigid one.
The big lesson you're learning here is whatever works, there's many ways to do things, and you have to find out what works for you. So give everything a try. Try sitting first, then putting your cane in, then seat belting, try what Vincent said and see what works for you. And that's the best way to do it, really. And give yourself the option of trying each one, and whatever works best, do it. We talked the other day, yesterday, about so many different people being teachers. And so I was wondering if anybody that's a teacher would like to tell us why they picked the field they did, what they got out of it. Is there anybody that's interested in doing that?
This is Judy. I want to add that know that with Bard, you can always use the search and get a hint for like smoothies and see what you get.
It will be on the recording for this though, won't it?
It sure will.
Has anyone ever tried from Papa John's a pizza bowl?
No.
It's all toppings, no crust.
Wow.
You can do 3 to 7 toppings. It's called the pizza bowl and it's from Papa John's. They have a couple of designer ones, you know, that they've already fashioned, but you could also do create your own.
Bowls are really popular, and now every sandwich shop you can get it wrapped in lettuce, you know, your sandwich.
Oh yeah, get a lettuce wrap.
Lettuce wrap, you know, so there's a lot of places they can do the burger wrapped in lettuce. It's a little more messy, but sandwiches like, you know, Jimmy John's and Sub, you know, they can be like, well, I want it wrapped in lettuce.
I've started when I get them wrapped in lettuce, which I do a lot of times, I put it in a big bowl and I just start cutting it up. This way I don't wear it.
This is Jean, and I am one of those teachers. And back to the question, it almost doesn't matter what you choose as your teaching field. If you want to be a teacher, you need to have the passion for the teaching. I've actually seen this. I was department chair, and I had about 3 or 4 different departments. You know, all of a sudden, they'd come up with a new course. Teachers that were passionate could take the information and develop a good teaching plan. And people that don't like teaching, it'd be just as boring as a brand new thing as it was for the last 20 years on whatever else they've done. I really find that the subject matter is almost immaterial to a good teacher, except if you're passionate about the subject and you like to teach, that then you have a home run.
I was just curious, the different types of teaching, why they picked those specific fields.
Well, in my case, you know, I try to remember back to why I did. You know, that was 50 years ago. Part of it was just, I don't think I'd ever thought about it. And then I saw the curriculum in the, you know, we used to have college catalogs that were books that you look through, see all the majors. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, those courses all look interesting. I'll try some of those. And then I just got into it. And 4 years later, I graduated. And from that, I went to other things. But my field was really multidisciplinary because it's what is now called family and consumer sciences. Back in the olden days, it was home economics, sciences, the food, the human relationships, child development, interior design, business approach, you know, kitchen management. I mean, it has everything. I like that. I don't like getting stuck down in one thing. So
very good. Well, I was a teacher. This is Janie Degenshine. I'm still a teacher. I graduated with a music education degree, and I taught instrumental music to little 4th, 5th, and 6th graders back in the day in 1976. And I did that for 7 years or so. And I loved it dearly. And then I stayed home with raise my kids. And I started a Saturday school in Montclair, New Jersey, which is an artsy type area. And they had a cultural arts and music program. And so I taught there. And when I taught there, I was sighted, less sighted, and blind. There was more teaching going on of educating the students and the parents to that a blind person could still teach instrumental music. And how did I do it? And all of those kinds of things. And I brought my cane in with me and I set up the stands by myself and I moved the desks around so we had room. You know, you just do it, right? And if you do it with confidence and you try it the first time, and if you're not confident, you go in earlier and figure out, how am I going to do this? Organize this room. There's desks in here. It's a science class. So I moved all the desks out to the sides and I put all the chairs in the middle. And I was fortunate enough that I taught flute, clarinet, sax, oboe. I taught all the instruments when I was teaching instrumental music in the school system. But on Saturdays, when I was totally blind, I taught all the woodwinds. And I told the parents back in the day that I have to touch your children's cheeks. I have to make sure they're not puffing when they're blowing on their instrument. If you want to sit in the classroom, because this was back when this all started, you can't touch kids. You know, when I was going to school, the teachers hugged us. We got on the bus. Everybody high-fived. Everything was no problem. But then as I continued in the 90s, I had to ask permission. And so a lot of the parents stayed in the classroom and they were pretty amazed with the whole thing. And it ended up being really good because I couldn't see the music anymore. But I told the kids, you have to learn how to read music. And here's what you're going to do. A staff has 5 lines and 4 spaces. So we're going to learn that. And I taught them the values, of course, and the rhythms and things like that. But they had to say the names. And you know what? They learned how to read music faster. So I wrote a little book out and I handed it out to my school that I graduated from. And explained that even if people could see, they should try this technique with the students because they have to, you know, when you talk to somebody and you're studying with another person, when you explain it to them, you also get more knowledge for yourself because it takes more discipline to explain it to somebody than to just know it. And so it became a real teaching tool for a lot of people. So anyway, I still love music. I still sing. I still play my flute. I'm still pretty active in the music field. So that's me. And I was wondering if there was anybody else that wanted to share about themselves with teaching.
No, yes. This is Judy. I'll tell you, it isn't so much what I taught as how I got into teaching. When I was a student teacher, mm-hmm. Well, first of all, they didn't know where to send me because there wasn't any school that actually wanted me to come. I said, well, why don't you go to East High School in Denver? Because I graduated from there. Maybe they'll take me. And usually they don't want you to go where you were in school because they'll think of you as a kid. But they let me come. And this was, I knew I was dealing with a school district that had rules against hiring a blind person because they would say you didn't pass the physical and therefore you couldn't teach there. And I was just learning about the National Federation of the Blind. I didn't know a lot yet. I also had a rehab counselor. I don't know how many of you are familiar with that. You know, state rehabilitation agencies can pay for your school. And what they told me was, I'll have to be prepared to move away from Denver because they won't hire blind teachers. And I thought, why are you accepting that? That's wrong. I thought I'd be so good at student teaching that they would hire me. I student taught, I applied for job, and they wouldn't hire me. So I got another teaching job. I was learning more about the NFB, and they were the only ones who said, if you want to teach, we will do what we can to help you. And I thought, you know, I hadn't even joined yet. And I thought, how come my rehab counselor didn't say that? And I was so impressed that they'd offer to help me that I started going to the meetings. And then eventually we filed a lawsuit, we, the NFB, they paid for it, they provide attorney. And eventually I was hired as a substitute teacher. And another blind teacher called me and thanked me because she got the first full-time job out of it. She was not a member of the NFB. And I said to her, I'm not who you need to thank. You have to thank the National Federation of the Blind for 3 reasons. One is, I wouldn't have known what to do to make it happen. Number two, I wouldn't have had the money to make it happen. I couldn't have paid for it even if I knew what to do. And number three, I wouldn't have had the nerve to say that I was suing a school district. But when I could say that the National Federation of the Blind was doing it, then it was okay. And ever since then, that was in 1971, I've been a part of all this.
This is Peters. I would love to share my story. My doctorate is in theology. So my career has been that of a counselor. My master's degree was in social work. And as a result of working in one of our major hospitals, two of my colleagues and I decided we were Christians and we decided to start a group. And we called it the Concerned Christian Social Workers. So we established that LLC. And then what was happening was, as a medical social worker in the hospitals, our primary duties were following doctor's orders to patients and their families in discharge planning. And that was counseling them on things they could and should not do or could do and should do. We started that, and then a few years later, I started losing my vision. I already had difficulties in my right eye, but I was having difficulties in my left as well. So as a result of blindness, in 2006, I was diagnosed as legally blind. And then in 2011, I decided to go back to school. I had some usable vision, very, very low, but I decided to go back and get my doctorate in theology. There were so many questions that were unanswered that no one could answer for me, that I relied heavily on my faith as my rehabilitation. So therefore, I went back and got my doctorate degree. And recently, I have started CP Ministries, primarily counseling and praying with people that are visually impaired, especially those that are blind. Pray with anybody, but especially those that are blind. Well, I had the opportunity with President Payne in the state of Ohio to start a Communities of Faith division. And we're 2 years running now, going into our third year. And that was initiated by my first opportunity being in the National Communities of Faith in 2013 and Tom Anderson, learning about, you know, different religions and people that were having so many issues, just weren't being reached but once a year at the national conventions. A lot of things started from there and kind of kept me moving and kept me motivated. And that's why I believe so very much in mentoring. Everyone needs a mentor. Suzanne Turner from Ohio, she's a great mentor. We mentor each other, but she also is the chairperson of a mentoring work group with the Black Blind Leaders Association. And we find that when you can mentor others, they become mentors and the process continues. We can't answer everybody's questions, but some people just need those two ears and that one mouth. Initiate that so that people have some outlet where they can at least talk to someone, get some wisdom that's going to be given through kindness and love. You know, everybody can't accept criticism, and it's just the way it's being done and how it's being delivered to that individual. Every mentor is not the right mentor for certain people. So we just keep trying to encourage and embrace people where they are, be it their spiritual well-being or their mental health. I mean, whatever the problem is or concerns that they may have to make this life a better place. We are all wonderfully and beautifully made, and we can live the life we want.
Eleanor, you have the floor.
Hi, I'm just a normal person, not a teacher, not an educator. Just an old 80-year-old person that still have a little bit of vision, but just over the past few years have lost my vision. And I could tell you, if it wasn't for Joanne Reynolds, who is my mentor, I don't think I'd be talking on the phone today. She has given me such inspiration to go on and fight for my rights, fight for services. You guys are amazing. And that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Well, thank you for being on and thank you for being here. You're going to learn a lot. And you know what? Everybody needs somebody sometime. Remember that song? Everybody needs somebody sometime.
Now, Angela has her hand raised.
We're talking about mentors. And I lost my vision in 2008. And I still get choked up. My mentor was a gentleman by the name of Joe Ruffalo. And I know Janie knows him well. He was my mentor up until last year. Unfortunately, he passed away. Joe was full of resources and full of encouragement. He helped me to be the advocate for the blind and visually impaired and hearing impaired that I am today. I will always thank Joe, and I have him in my prayers all the time.
Thank you very much, Angela.
Thank you, Janie, for letting me share.
Of course. And for those of you that don't know, Joe Ruffalo was the president of the state of New Jersey for 27 years, and he was my brother for 68. And I was never blessed with anything more than that. Sandy, you have your hand up, honey.
I find it unfortunate that people say, I'm just a whatever it is. Forget mm-hmm. the just. You're a person with value, and don't let just minimize you. Just a comment. But as far as teaching, I worked as a rehab teacher for several years when I lived in Missouri, and I was able to do that. Not because I have a master's in rehab teaching, because I wouldn't bother with that, but just because of the experiences that I've had over the years being involved in the National Federation of the Blind. And I say I wouldn't bother with it getting a degree, because I know that a lot of the programs want you to do things in such a strange way that it just doesn't make any sense to me. And I love problem solving. So I hope during the week as we have these conversations, open mics or whatever, that maybe I've got some answers.
Sandy also was a court reporter. You know, the person who goes and writes down everything you say. That was Sandy.
I was the first totally blind court reporter in the country to ever do that. And if it weren't for the National Federation of the Blind, that wouldn't have happened either. And it happened because there is a research and development committee, and Curtis Willoughby took on the challenge of writing a computer program that would translate the steno code to English so I could read it.
We have a woman in Minnesota doing it now.
And now she is talking with people who are considering this as a career.
Wonderful.
And I liked it because if an attorney wanted a transcript, he couldn't go to the judge or somebody else. He had to come talk to me about it.
Ada has
Ada a Crandall.
First of all, I'm Ada Crandall. I'm in New Jersey. And when you're talking about mentors, I've been blessed. When my sight changes, I call her, she's there. A mentor is one of the most important people that you can have in your life. I started losing my eyesight 16 years ago, and they told me eventually I would go completely blind. I see very little now, and I thank my mentor from the bottom of my heart for every conversation that we've had. And I want everybody to know my mentor is Jamie Deckenshine. She's been a star in the night for me, and I know she's been there for so many other people also, because that's how she is. She has a heart for people, and hey, girl, I'm glad that you've been there for me.
Thank you very much. I learned it from my brother and my parents, and a lot of people on this call do the same thing I do. So, you know, it's what we do because we care. And a lot of people on this call care about each other. Even if you don't know who they are, you get a call from somebody from another state and they're like, I need help. Okay, let's see what we can do. I'm sure lots of people on this call have gotten calls from all over the country to assist in some way. As all of you know, it's better to give than receive.
And June has her hand raised.
When you're talking about mentors, I have a mentor and she is great. She's very spiritual and she helped me out through my transition going to my first convention. And the mentor that I have, that I choose and that helped me transition, like to go to conventions and all, was Dr. Peters. And the one that doesn't know as of yet, but she's going to know today, would be Suzanne Turner. These are the ladies from Ohio, and I follow them religiously and graciously. And I am proud to be into any program that they have or listen to both of them speak. They really have helped me because I'm newly blind, and my first convention was in New Orleans, and I had a nice time, and I'm transitioning very well.
You're making the statement here to grow in a different way, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Grow in a different way and to share in a different way. And we all appreciate that. We appreciate everybody that's on this call for stepping up and trying something new.